Agricultural programming on WILL is made in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027. Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 28th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along shortly with a complete look at today's agricultural news. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Don Day about the agricultural weather forecast. In between, we'll hear from weed scientist Aaron Hager at the University of Illinois. He's concerned about herbicide carryover. And we'll get an update on agricultural policy as it pertains to the WTO. Some recent decisions there about sugar subsidies out of the European Union and how that might be deployed with the cotton subsidy decision that Brazil brought against the U.S. last year to work against corn growers in the Midwest. Stay with us for this Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The March wheat settled the nearby contract at 370 and a quarter, down 3 cents. The May futures were down 4 3/4 today. In Kansas City, the March contract down just a penny and a half at $4.39 a bushel. From the corn pit in Chicago, nearby March at 228, up a half. The May futures at 238 and 3/4, down a quarter. And the July's at 248 and a quarter, down a quarter. December futures at 264 and a quarter were down 1/4. March soybeans, 580 and a quarter, up 3/4. The May futures, 594, up 1. July contract at 604 and 3/4, up a half. And November beans up 2.5 cents today at 618 and 1/4. March bean meal, 174.20, down 230 for the day. The March bean oil up 60 cents at 23.59. March feeder cattle at 106.87 and a half, up 82.5 cents. And the February live cattle at $90.15 from the Mercantile Exchange, 7.5 cents lower. And the lean hogs finished the April contract down 65 cents at 61.47 and a half for the day. Today's broadcast made possible with support from Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural communities in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg. He's at 309-341-5003. And from Kathy Ferguson in Morrison at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, their member FDIC, and an equal housing lender. On the line with us to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, next week, a week from today, Wayne, you and I will not be sitting in the chairs here, but we'll actually be in Indiana. You're already there, but I'll be in Covington, Indiana, along with you at the Beef House for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. I'm looking forward to seeing you for our soybean commodity panel. That's at 9:10 Eastern Time, 8:10 Central Time. You and Kurt Kimmel and Dan Zwicker, Vince Reinecke on that panel. It's just one of a whole series of panels that will be at that all-day Ag Outlook meeting. I bet you're looking forward to coming over and seeing us, too.
You bet. How many years in a row is this we had this now, Todd?
Oh, you know,
like 12 years?
I think it's longer than that.
Maybe longer than that. Anyhow, we haven't missed one yet, and we don't plan on missing one in the future. It's just a wonderful day for all the listeners to come out and get to personally meet. It's great fun for us to get to meet a lot of our listeners in person, talk to them and chat about all their personal questions. And it's really a good opportunity for everybody to ask the question that they want asked, not what we want to tell you or not what Todd thinks you want to know, but what you want to know.
You've made every one of these, haven't you?
I've made every one.
You're the only one that's been at all of them. Is that correct?
Yes.
I think so. You know, I'm thinking because I work for Extension and have since 94, but we started those before I left here. Charlie Lindy and I did.
Yes.
And I think the first one was 91. So this may be year 15. I'd have to go back and take a look.
It's quite a few years, but we highly enjoy them, and it's such a great opportunity for all the listeners out there. Worst case scenario, you're going to get an awfully good meal.
Yeah, you always do, and that's not, there's no real cost to the day. If you don't eat there, you don't have to pay, but if you want to eat, it's $8.50, and you make that check out or give that cash to the Beef House. So we're not picking anything up from WILL's point of view from our listeners. They're just picking up the meal. Not only will we have the soybean panel, but we'll have a cash grain panel that day. Of course, we'll talk about corn. We have a panel on ethanol, one on the farm bill, ag weather in the afternoon, and also an update on the FarmDoc website. So those who are wanting to learn more about crop insurance as we get into that last couple of weeks.
And boy, that's a good site, Todd.
Yeah.
We use it a lot, even just as being a crop insurance salesman. There's a lot of good information. We recommend our customers to look at that before they come and talk to us so they've got a little better idea. A lot of printouts that I have come right off that. So good information.
Yeah, and we'll have that site up and running, and the guy who puts it together, Gary Schnittke, will be there to talk about the site and how to use it. So if you haven't been to one of our all-day Ag Outlook meetings, this is the perfect time. Okay, we need to get to what happened in the marketplace for the day.
Choppy is a good word, Todd. You look up and you look down, and we're up, we're down, we're all around. And I think that's sort of the way you can phrase the day. It was when we had volume and the funds were in there buying, we were higher. When the funds went away, we sunk lower on the day. Just a little bit of a surprise with the heavy deliveries. The only strong stopper this morning was Bunge and the oil, and the rest of the deliveries, which were big but somewhat expected, stopped by weak cans. So, quite a close, just down a quarter of a cent basically in the corn and up fractionally in the beans after being all over the place. I think we did see a little bit of painting the color green on some of these by some of these new index funds wanting to close the month out on a positive note.
And I guess deliveries weren't too terribly bad in the corn either. That not nearly what they expected, is that right?
The corn wasn't this bad, but, still some fairly big numbers for no strong stoppers. I think one of the big news was a flock of dead flamingos in the Bahamas is being tested for the bird flu, and that's just getting a little closer than we'd like it to the U.S. here. And a dead cat was tested positive over on a German Baltic island. So there's just more and more fear from that bird flu and where it's spreading and what it's doing to the poultry consumption around the world.
A dead cat. I had not read that one. Wow. That's an interesting one. I don't know what impact that has.
Well, it's that it went to another animal.
Yeah, I understood that, and it passed it positive. So not only is it jumping from birds potentially to humans, but to other animals, which
and
I
so
suppose
that's not a good thing. Not a good thing.
Right.
But we did see some firming domestic cash basis and the soil staying strong because of the good stopper. But Brazil is moving along fairly well in harvest, but we're hearing about some harvest delays down there from some rain. I believe that South America getting too much rain at times.
Hey, I saw a story last night out near Decatur where there were a number of grass fires. And, of course, that's on the south end of the drought here in the Midwest. It would be on the very, very, very south wind of the drought of what's been happening in the northern part of this state. But I guess that's a problem there. And I suppose your producers are probably talking about dry conditions, too, maybe?
Well, over here, we're in awfully good shape. Todd, our tiles are running, and we've had some pretty decent rain. So we're very fortunate, and I believe if you listen to the climatologists, the Indiana area of stuff is not going to be the one that's going to be affected with the dryness this year from the La Nina effect. It's going to be central Illinois west is where some of the problems will come in. So, but we're in pretty good shape on moisture here in Indiana.
Anything on the Mercantile Exchange before I let you go?
Mercantile Exchange, stuff bounced back pretty good on the close. Looked like we saw some fund buying come in right at the end of the day, but all in all the pressure from all this extra chicken available is weighing a little bit on the pork and the beef situation.
Wayne, we'll be looking forward to seeing you next week.
We'll look forward to seeing all our listeners next Tuesday, Todd.
All right. Thanks much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Tuesday afternoons. The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming here on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, you can call 217-383-4606. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with ag meteorologist Don Day about the weather. He's out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Ed Kieser's forecast looks like this for tonight across the two-state region. He says it'll be partly to mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 25 in northeastern Indiana to 50 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds, some sunshine, breezy, mild with a few scattered showers and some isolated thunderstorms developing. Highs will range from 47 in the far north to 75 in southwestern Illinois. Up next, a tidbit from Aaron Hager, Extension Weed Scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He says farmers in this state and others around the Midwest that were hit by that severe drought in the past season need to be wary of herbicide carryover. The dry weather in Illinois allowed a few more weeds to poke through the canopy this season, and that may be a bad sign for the next crop destined for a particular field. Dry weather can sometimes keep an herbicide from becoming active, and in a severe case, from breaking down. That may mean it is still in the soil when the next crop is sown. If the crop isn't the same as the previous, it could cause some serious damage, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager.
So typically what then can happen is if these products are then released later on into the season, or perhaps even into the following year, the amount remaining in the soil could be high enough to cause some sorts or some types of damage to certain rotational crops.
Several factors should be considered when determining the potential for herbicide carryover, says Aaron Hager, including herbicide application timing, soil pH, and soil moisture. He says the labels of most soil residual herbicides indicate the amount of time that must elapse between application and planting of a rotational crop.
There are even some products on their labels, if you look at the replant intervals or the rotational intervals, sometimes these intervals can actually be increased if you get into conditions of very, very dry soils. And the labels will actually specify that if a certain amount of precipitation is not received by such and such a date on the calendar, that the rotational interval may either be lengthened for that crop, or they may recommend and suggest that that a different crop be planted.
So here are the 2 points Hager says farmers should consider as it concerns herbicide carryover. Dry soil conditions can increase the risk of herbicide carryover, and check herbicide rotational intervals. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
In agricultural news, St. Louis-based Monsanto Company has agreed to pay the University of California more than $100 million to settle the school's claim that the biotechnology company infringed on its patent related to a hormone that makes cows produce more milk. The university's Board of Regents sued Monsanto for patent infringement in 2004, and the case was scheduled to go to trial yesterday. Monsanto said it agreed to pay the school $100 million in upfront royalties and would pay 15 cents a dose, or at least $5 million annually, to license the patent technology, commonly called BST, in the future. The university's patent expires in 2023. Colombia's government said yesterday it believes exports to the U.S. will grow by 50% within 3 years as a result of the free trade deal negotiated earlier Monday. The deal must be approved by lawmakers in Colombia and the U.S. USDA Secretary Mike Johans says there will likely be some big winners in U.S. agriculture from the deal.
Big ticket U.S. exports to Colombia in 2005 were wheat, horse grains, cotton, and soybeans. So the agreement, the free trade agreement, promises increased market share for our producers with the elimination of tariffs and non-tariff barriers for U.S. ag products.
The deal calls for almost 100% of industrial goods produced in Colombia to arrive in the U.S. duty-free, and about 82% of U.S. goods to enter Colombia tariff-free once the deal is signed into law. Johannes says one reason the U.S.-Colombia free trade deal is a good one for U.S. agriculture is that many Colombian ag goods already enter the U.S. on a duty-free basis.
I should also mention that since many products from Colombia already enter the U.S. market duty-free under the Andean Trade Preference Act, the agreement really is another step in leveling the playing field.
In 2005, Colombia and the U.S. exchanged $14.3 billion worth of trade, and Colombia is the second largest agricultural market for the U.S. in Latin America. The U.S. pork industry is reacting favorably to the deal. National Pork Producers Council President Don Buell says once the deal is implemented, it will mean greater market access in Colombia to U.S. pork.
This is wonderful news. Colombia is a market with a lot of potential. There's 43 million potential customers for U.S. pork there, and that's a great thing. Pork was a sensitive topic in this negotiation, but the administration and their negotiators did a great job of giving pork what we consider to be a wonderful deal in the Colombian trade agreement.
But National Corn Growers Association Vice President of Public Policy John Doggett says NCGA needs to take a closer look at the agreement before endorsing it.
These agreements are always somewhat complex, and it takes a certain amount of time to walk through them and take a look as to exactly what do they mean and what do they do. Colombia is already our number six customer for commodity corn. We're looking to continue that trend in this trade agreement, and we're looking to see expanded opportunities for other corn-based commodities.
Monday's announcement follows the announcement earlier this year of a U.S.-Peru free trade agreement. U.S. negotiators are reportedly still working on a similar deal with Ecuador. China's agriculture minister says agricultural export growth in 2005 helped narrow the PRC's ag trade deficit by 70%. China's Ministry of Agriculture reports exports increased last year by 17.7% to $27.18 billion, while imports rose 2.4% to $28.65 billion. A study commissioned by the South Dakota Corn Growers and Corn Utilization Council shows that the ethanol industry in South Dakota added almost $676 million to the economy in 2004. The study found ethanol production raised the price of corn for 50 miles around an ethanol plant. Milk producers across the country will soon be seeing lower milk prices if they have not already. Alvin Holland, Director of Fluid Milk Marketing and Economic Analysis for Dairy Farmers of America, says the price pressure is coming from an overabundance of supply.
We talked to all of the DFA dispatchers, and without a doubt, every one of them said this week that production is up. In fact, every area except perhaps Louisiana, where it was just flat.
Holland says those large milk supplies are already straining processing capacity, and that's before the spring flush really gets underway in most parts of the country. USDA's Risk Management Agency is reminding producers in Illinois and Indiana that they have until March 15th to purchase crop insurance for the 2006 growing season. Meanwhile, the National Resources Conservation Service is also stressing deadlines. The 2006 Conservation Security Program sign-up closes on March 31st for producers in the Upper Sangamon watershed. That includes portions of Champaign, Christian, DeWitt, Ford, Logan, Macon, McLean, Piatt, Sangamon, and Shelby counties in Illinois. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to join us next Tuesday for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting At the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, that's just off Exit 4 on Interstate 74 between Champaign and Indianapolis. If you have the opportunity, it'll be worth your while. I promise you, come join us. It's absolutely free. There is a nominal charge for the meal, but you make that out to the Beef House. And hey, it's the Beef House. The meal's got to be pretty good. $8.50 for that. Join us next Tuesday for the all-day Ag Outlook meeting. One of the topics, by the way, that we'll take up is agricultural policy. Not with this man, but with the specialist from here on campus at the University of Illinois and from Purdue University. Up next, ag policy. It's been about a year since the WTO ruled against U.S. programs that subsidize cotton farmers. That ruling and one against EU sugar subsidies, as you'll hear, may reach even further into the breadbasket of the United States than first thought. The cotton case was brought to the WTO by Brazil. That nation said the U.S. was wrongly subsidizing cotton into the world market. The WTO agreed. This was the first step into the hotly contested U.S. 2007 Farm Bill debate. And that discussion is just heating up. Harry DeGorder of Cornell University outlines how the WTO cotton decision may impact farmers in the Midwest that grow corn, soybeans, and wheat, or other crops too.
Loan deficiency payments, you get the same price for all your production, so that would not fall. Price discrimination like you have for dairy would fall under this. Countercyclical payments for dairy and all other crops would fall under this because you get a higher price for a part on your base. And then direct payments would also, I would argue direct payments would also fall under it because you don't have to plant to get your payments for direct payments. That's true. But the cotton case ruled that the U.S. Direct payments are not green box in the WTO. They do distort trade, and production decisions are affected because of fruit and veg restriction. You're not allowed to plant fruit and vegetables on direct payments. So therefore, I would argue that the direct payment program would also fall under this same WTO ruling that you're getting a high price for part of your production and plant whatever you want at the world price.
The fruit and vegetable restriction in the 2002 Farm Bill says a farmer may not collect a direct payment if he converts from a program crop like corn, soybeans, or wheat to fruit and vegetable production. It was a compromise farmers in the Midwest made with those in California, and that restriction means the direct payment does impact what and how much of a crop a farmer might sow. The recent WTO ruling on sugar against the EU bolsters the case against the direct payments made to U.S. farmers.
There's two different issues here. That's correct. The cotton ruling ruled on the fruit and vegetable restriction, and that's against the United States cotton. Now, that has direct implications for direct payments that they're not green box, that they should be declared in the amber box. So the only way direct payments are under fire with the cotton decision is if they put it into a different box and you're over your limit, then you have to reduce them. That's a different issue. I agree. But what I'm drawing from the EU sugar case is that there are direct, I mean, if people wanted to make a case for it, they could argue that direct payments operates in a very similar way as the EU sugar in the sense they cross-subsidize production onto world markets. The high payment on part of your base or on your base payments on base cross-subsidized production at the world price. So there's two different issues here, the cotton and the EU sugar.
DeGorder says he has proven the cross-subsidy theoretically and empirically. He thinks it means Brazil or other nations could successfully make a case against U.S. countercyclical and direct payments. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. By the way, Associate Professor DeGorder presented his findings to the faculty of the University of Illinois Department of Agriculture and Consumer Economics in mid-February. Well, in 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Illinois Senate voted 52-3 today for a proposal that would require 10% of all gasoline sold in Illinois to be ethanol starting in 2008. The plan also would provide millions of dollars in grants for ethanol plants to be built and improved here and to promote ethanol research. Supporters say the program will boost Illinois' farm economy and provide consumers with an attractive renewable fuel source. But some lawmakers fear the 10% mandate will be too much of a burden for ethanol makers and drive up gasoline prices. The proposal now heads to the House. There's little action today at George Ryan's racketeering and fraud trial. The former Illinois governor and jurors have today off, while the judge and attorneys are drafting instructions to be given the jurors before they start their deliberations. Jeers were mixed with cheers as Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels headlined a rally for his highway initiative this morning. Daniels told the crowd that the legislation would help fund numerous highway and transportation projects and create tens of thousands of jobs. The bill would allow him to lease the Indiana Toll Road for nearly $4 billion. An Indiana lawmaker says he'll stop trying to revive the debate over daylight saving time during this legislative session. State Representative Dave Crooks was pushing for legislation that would have put issues such as daylight saving time and Indiana time zones to a statewide vote. Crooks says such efforts now seem futile because he can't get any support from the governor and legislative leaders. But he says he'll try to revive the issue next session if he's reelected. Currently, Indiana will join 47 other states with statewide daylight saving time beginning April 2nd. The Illinois Association of Realtors says statewide home sales went down just over 2% in January, compared to the same period a year ago when Illinois reached an all-time high. Spokesperson Mary Schaefer says Illinois is keeping pace with a national trend that has shown a drop in home sales the last 6 months. She says the Realtors Group expects home sales to remain steady throughout 2006. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Ag at WILLAg.org, where you can find out everything there is to know about next week's All-Day Ag Outlook meeting at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It starts early in the morning, so you need to arrive, especially if you're from Illinois, quite early. We'll pick up things around 8 o'clock a.m. Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7:30 a.m. Central. Registration starts. So come on over. It's absolutely free. There is a nominal fee for the meal. It's only $8.50. You'll be paying that directly to the Beef House. It's the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. We'll finish up late in the afternoon, mid-afternoon, about 3, 3:30 or so, 2:30 in the Central Time Zone. We're joined now here on the Closing Market Report by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest. What can we expect over the next couple of days?
Well, February going out like a lamb and March going to come in like a lamb. Not a lot of activity, at least over the next couple of days, and some pretty mild temperatures across a good chunk of the central and west central United States. We do see a couple of Pacific fronts, though, that will be moving on through. Now, these will be coming from the west coast, not out of Canada, so the air from them won't be terribly cold. But we will see increasing chances for precipitation across the central and eastern portions of the U.S., especially by the weekend and into next week.
We know that Texas and portions of Oklahoma suffering through severe drought. Could you detail for me the rest of the nation and where things are not looking so good? Missouri, Illinois, parts of Iowa, if that's the case.
Well, that'll be the case in the short term, although those states you just mentioned should do better next week, the way the pattern is shaping up with an area of low pressures forming over the central part of the United States. Now, Oklahoma and Texas have a chance for a little bit of moisture, but they're still suffering. Areas that we're watching that really need some moisture would be central and eastern portions of Nebraska, just about all of Kansas, and then into the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles, as well as the wheat areas of eastern Colorado. Suffering some dryness, of course, a week ago there was severe cold in those areas I just mentioned, and now they're looking at temperatures today that'll be 70s to near 80 in some of those areas. So in just 7 to 9 days, the tables have turned with temperature there.
Heading into harvest and harvesting, actually, I believe, in South America for the bean crop?
Well, it looks like they should have some pretty good harvest weather. Now, there's still going to be some decent chances of rain that could slow harvest down a little bit in some areas of Brazil, drier weather in Argentina. Nothing that looks terribly bad for the harvest down there other than some minor delays in Brazil from some rain.
Don, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks much. Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here every Tuesday afternoon on AM 580's Closing Market Report. Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing farmers credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. That is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at today's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and the weather reports right there on the World Wide Web. Just go to WILLAG.org. That's O-R-G. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.